We look at the federal election campaign in the context of a recent book, Rescuing Canada's Right Blueprint for a Conservative Revolution. Its co-author Tesha Carradine joins me on the line from Toronto this morning to talk about the book, which is published by John Wiley & Sons and sells for $26.99. Tesha Carradine is the Ontario Director of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, who in previous careers practiced civil and commercial law, was legislative assistant to the Ontario Attorney General, producer at CBC News World, and producer and host at CPAC. She co-wrote the book with Adam Daifala, who will be on tomorrow. Please welcome to thecommentary.ca Tesha Carradine. Good morning, Ms. Carradine.
Good morning.
Whose idea was it to put you and Daifala on the cover?
That was the publisher's. They wanted to present, I think, a non-traditional conservative face. The sort of stereotypical conservative is older, more male, I guess uniformly male, even though Adam is male. And I think that they felt that we represent, to them anyway, a new generation of conservatives.
Is there a stigma in being a conservative? Have you found that in your personal experience that there is a stigma in being a conservative?
Sure. It depends where you are. I live in Toronto, and that's one of the stories we tell in the introduction to the book is how sometimes when you're at a cocktail party, people will look askance at you if you're a self-proclaimed conservative. I think that out west it's certainly a different story, but there are parts of the country where it's less popular to be a conservative, and that's one of the issues conservatives face. We call it conservative cool, the idea that people don't want to identify with the label and therefore may find it harder to vote that way or call themselves a conservative.
Is it less popular, do you think, or are Canadians generally small L liberal?
Well, this is the myth that we try and dispel. It depends how you define liberal as well. What we talk about in the book is the fact that liberal in Canada doesn't mean classical liberal or really even small L liberal. It means statist. The Liberal Party and liberals in the country advance big government solutions to problems. We see the best cleavage with that. The best example is the daycare topic that's come up in the debate, the different policies, whereas the Liberals fear you would spend your own money on beer and popcorn and not your kids, and therefore the government should be the one to decide how to raise your kids. The conservative position, the small C, and apparently more and more the big C position, is that less government is often better, and that individuals and families should have as much freedom to make their own choices. That's where we come down. So, and we don't think Canadians are traditionally statist. If you look at the history of the country, we talk about this in the book, we were not founded by statists. It's the past 40 years of chiefly liberal rule that has really implanted this notion that that's how we define ourselves.
In the context of the current election campaign, how is the conservative revolution been? How have they succeeded?
How is it going?
Yeah, how is it going?
Well, it's certainly going, I think, better than a lot of people expected. We have to be careful, though, because again, in Rescuing Canada's Right, we distinguish between big C and small C conservatives, and you can find, if you elect a big C conservative government, which seems to be what will be happening, that the conservatives have run a very good campaign, the liberals have run a bad campaign, and it's very likely it'll be probably a minority conservative government at this point. But will they be able to act in a small C conservative way? Will they be able to implement small government policies, avoid the taxing and spending that parties like the NDP, which may end up holding the balance of power, would probably like them to do? What we say in the book is that in order to really achieve a small C conservative government, you have to lay a foundation whereby they have enough popular support to govern that way. And that would imply going outside the political spectrum to things like think tanks, academia, media, basically communicating with Canadians to create a more conservative culture in general, so that when the party is elected, the popular opinion is such that it pushes it to act in a small C conservative way in office.
You talked about the Liberals running a bad campaign, the Conservatives running a good campaign. Should the Conservatives win, whether that be a minority or a majority government, probably a minority, on the 23rd, do you think that gives credence that Canadians are embracing conservative values, or are they just punishing the Liberals?
Well, that's one of the issues that's very important to consider, because I think the Canadians are punishing Liberals to a great extent if they elect the Tories. It's almost a reversal of 2003, whereby the Conservatives seem to make mistake after mistake in the campaign, and the Liberals capitalized on that. This time we're seeing the Liberals tripping up all over the place, and the Conservatives seizing that moment. That being said, though, the Conservatives have done a lot of the things that we suggest in the book in terms of defining their policies very clearly, being small government in areas such as child care. They haven't gone as far on health care as we'd like in terms of allowing more private participation, but they do talk about allowing more flexibility in the system and looking to private delivery if this public system cannot deliver, even though the public system would still pay for it. So they are making small C conservative noises, and we like that. But again, like I said, if they are in a minority position, will they be able to implement those changes? It's hard to say.
You talk about earlier about the distinction between small C and big C conservative. You're not a member of the Conservative Party, right?
No, I'm not.
Can a conservative revival take place then, if without the Conservative Party of Canada, the big C Conservative Party of Canada?
Well, it has to take place with both the party and the external conservative infrastructure. We talk about the examples of the United States and Britain, whereby conservatives outside the party system began to create more conservative culture in sort of the popular mainstream. They did this chiefly in the United States through think tanks, I think the Heritage Foundation, American Enterprise, and others, through the media, establishing outlets like Fox News, having a lot of talk radio, and magazines like National Review, and also through campuses, academia, influencing young people, exposing them to conservative ideas that they may not get in their classrooms. That sort of thing has to happen, and without it, what you'll have is what we've had here in the past 40 years, if not the past 100 years, is a conservative party that isn't really pushed to be conservative. It acts very often liberal-lite, and even under the prime ministership of Brian Mulroney, who did many good conservative things, such as free trade and the GST, people may not like that one, but it was conservative. He also did a lot of non-conservative things, big corporate welfare handouts, big deficits, big government policies in many areas. So unless there is that conservative consensus established outside the party, there is always a danger the party will stray toward the mushy middle or stray toward liberal light. That's why we find it so important to really expose Canadians to conservatives in non-political ways.
You talk about this conservative infrastructure, and to seize on that for just a sec, you mentioned the media, Fox News, talk radio. Do you think that right-wing media outlets like that would be popular in Canada?
I think there certainly is an appetite for a different point of view. I mean, every time I give an interview to any radio station or television station, I get feedback from people saying it's nice to be able to hear this stuff out there on the radio, even when I'm at outlets that would be considered more center or more left-leaning. It's seen as giving a balance to the debate, and I think that's what's really important. I think that the problem is we don't have choice in this country of what we can listen to. It wouldn't be everybody that would listen to a more conservative-leaning station. That's clear. I mean, in the United States, they don't either. But the point is that people who may feel inclined to those views or may be interested in those views right now aren't hearing them anywhere. So they have nowhere to turn. They may think, well, maybe I shouldn't think that way because it certainly isn't reflected in the popular culture. So I do believe there would be an appetite for a Canadian version of it. I don't think that we have to copy the American example or the style that they have necessarily, but the idea of having a conservative point of view station, I think, is certainly something that would be interesting to many Canadians.
And how is it going in terms of building those media outlets, building those think tanks, building those organizations that advocate conservative values?
Well, Canada is ahead of the curve in terms of where it's starting, compared to the United States in particular. The United States, when it started doing this, was in the 1960s, following Goldwater's defeat, and they really had very little. They had a couple of magazines with very small readership, and not much else, quite frankly. We in Canada do have some excellent outlets and think tanks such as the Fraser Institute, organizations like the National Citizens Coalition or the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, for which I work, which do promote small government solutions to social problems. But we need more of them. The problem in Canada is that the other side of the coin, the big government, big state position think tanks, exist at a much greater level, and they are funded by tax dollars. This is the disturbing thing in Canada, is that the opponents of the type of small government view that we promote have been funded by the public purse since the late 1960s under the aegis of Pierre Elliott Trudeau. We started funding a host of these groups, multicultural groups, interest groups, think tanks, and they, like the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives, for example, which criticizes the Fraser Institute. Well, it's funded with public dollars. The Fraser doesn't take any public money. It's a charity, and it only takes private funds. So there's not an even playing field, and that's why it's critically important that conservatives really boost the kind of funding that we see for the institutions that exist and create new ones.
We're talking with Tasha Carradine, Ontario, Director of the Canadian Taxpayers Federation and co-author of the recent book Rescuing Canada's Red Blueprint for a Conservative Revolution, 2699 from Wiley. I look at the United States and I look at the culture war between the left and the right. People like the Michael Moores and the Al Frankens and then the Ann Coulters and the Rush Limbaughs on the other side. It's a most people find it obnoxious and not advancing debate at all. Is that where we're heading, though?
No, I don't think you have to be obnoxious. I think, like I said, it's not about copying the American style or the American character. It's about recognizing that you need to have agents of change. You need to have organization and infrastructure if you're going to get your point across to people in a smart and in a much greater way than you are today. I wouldn't say that our ambassadors here have to be carbon copies of the Ann Coulter style, but the point is we need to have articulate voices on the right, and I think we have many, but they don't necessarily get enough opportunity to voice their views in the press, for example. They're often described as right-wing in a pejorative way. The Fraser Institute gets that tag, and it's not being described that way to put it in a positive light. It's being done to put it in a negative light. Newspaper articles refer to the right-wing Fraser Institute. They will never refer to the left-wing Center for Policy Alternatives. Well, they should, because if they're going to be consistent, they would do that. So there's a lot of bias out there. So I think that, and we talk about this in our chapter on media, conservatives have to be careful as to how they tread in the media currently and not appear to be the angry, whining, screaming stereotype that some people have of them, especially in the United States, to get their points across in a way that Canadians will find appealing.
Well, let me pick an issue out, same-sex marriage. You say that the right could have been more successful in that area of debate. How can they appear more positive when they're debating an issue like same-sex marriage?
Well, what we feel in the book is that same-sex marriage debate is done. In this campaign, Mr. Harper brought it up at the very beginning, and then it kind of dropped away. It reared its head in the first debate. It seems to have died down as an issue, much as though the Liberals would like to bring it back. We feel because it was debated and because the Supreme Court voiced its opinion on it, if you don't use the notwithstanding clause, you will not be able to change the definition of marriage. And Mr. Harper said he will not use the notwithstanding clause, so we don't understand why they're beating that drum. His position before the issue was debated in the House was not an unreasonable position. He was in favor of same-sex unions. He just didn't want to call them marriage. But that got completely lost. And reviving this issue, we don't think is in anybody's interest. What we would rather see is a pro-family policy. I mean, personally, I think that same-sex couples should have the right to marry. I don't see it as a negative. In fact, I think that the creation of family units is a positive no matter what orientation, because families depend less on the government than they do on themselves. When you have a stable family unit, you don't have people, single moms who need the government support, for example, or single people who will be more likely to rely on programs. You have people who can rely on each other, who can build healthy community, who can create an interdependence that does not require the government's intervention. And that, again, goes to our small government view. Strong families are key to a small government society, and so we feel that regardless of their orientation, government and the conservatives should encourage all families to be formed.
But how do you reconcile that with the sort of Christian right or the religious rights view that same-sex marriage is anathema to their beliefs?
Well, this is the issue conservatives have to deal with. In a perfect world, everyone would have their way, but that's not how it works. And in the conservative movement, there are many different types of conservatives. Everyone will have to give up something if they are to move forward as a group. I think people have to recognize that. What we're saying here is that what matters very much to Christian and social conservatives is the notion of family. Family is a very important notion to them. What we're saying is that a pro-family policy would strengthen the kind of family that they want as well. And it's not for government to make a moral judgment on what kind of family is acceptable or not. If they really want to achieve the ultimate objective, which I believe they would, which is to strengthen families, that is, heterosexual families, you're not going to accomplish it by bashing gay families. focus on what matters to you in terms of creating incentives to marriage, incentives to have children, to create the kind of families that they want, and let the others be, and let them form themselves if they wish. The number of gay people who want to get married is not a huge number. It's an issue that's important, and it's a very symbolic way to some members of the gay community, but even within the gay community, there's division as to whether marriage is an actual goal or not. So we think that it's just a question of focusing on the bigger picture, and if Christian and social conservatives can do that, I think everyone would win.
At the outset of the interview, we talked about how the right can attract young people such as yourself, such as myself. how do you attract young people like ourselves, or how do you attract immigrant classes, for example?
Mm-hmm. It's a very important thing for the conservative movement to do, because obviously young people are always the future of a political movement, and immigrants in Canada are a very important constituency as well, since we have a low population growth here and more immigrants coming in. For young people, what we suggest is that the party is not the vehicle necessarily to make young people small-c conservatives. The younger generation is very apolitical in the partisan sense. They don't trust politicians, they don't like parties, but they're very issue-focused. So what we suggest is that small-c conservatives reach out to them on issues that matter to them, such as the environment, for example. Form environmental pressure groups from a conservative perspective, from a free market perspective, that look to non-governmental solutions to environmental problems. Form youth groups that talk about things like anti-poverty activism from a conservative, non-governmental perspective. Get young people involved in even things such as reaching out to them through the pastimes they enjoy, such as films and television and mass media. In the United States, they've started a Liberty Film Festival, believe it or not, to showcase conservative or small government movies. It might sound cute, but the point is that young people get a lot of their information and a lot of their opinions from film, from television. Conservatives have to reach out through those mediums. Now, when it comes to immigrants, it's a difficult line sometimes for conservatives to tread, because I think that, first of all, immigration policy has to serve Canada as a whole, and conservatives have to be mindful of that. I mean, the Liberals have used it to buy votes. Statistically, when you look at it, there's no question, there's no justification for a 1% target of population in terms of immigration, except to increase the number of people who will vote Liberal, quite frankly. They've never done a study as to why that is acceptable or not. Other countries, such as Australia, the U.S., have around 0.6 of a percent of population as their target, and in Canada, we've never actually even hit 1%. So the idea of reaching for that really has to be reexamined in the context of, will people who come here be able to actually do the things we tell them they can? I mean, if you have people coming here as doctors who then drive taxis, this doesn't do a favor to anybody, either the immigrants or existing Canadians. So conservatives have to develop an immigration policy that speaks to the needs of both Canadians and immigrants, and also reach out to immigrants on the ground in terms of connecting with their values of hard work, family values, the importance of entrepreneurship and skills development that they do cherish, to show them that conservatives share those beliefs and that they really should be considering being conservative.
Tasha, thanks so much for joining us. We could talk forever, but I'll continue.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
I'll continue this conversation with Adam in the morning.
Terrific.
Continued good luck with this book.
Thank you.
It's a great book. It's thought-provoking and it's deserving of a read, whether you're right or not. Rescuing Canada's Red Blueprint for a Conservative Revolution by Tasha Carradine and Adam Difala, published by Wiley, $26.99. For thecommentary.ca, I'm Joseph Plunham.